In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Monday, May 23rd, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. In hour number one of the program, I want to introduce you to a really fascinating person. On 9/11, a federal judge in Montana was laying in bed with a freshly broken pelvis when the disastrous events of 9/11 took place. And those events inspired her to start herself on a counterintelligence path in cyberspace. That path has led to over 200 cases with Shannon Rossmiller as a counterintelligence and terrorism asset for the FBI. She's author of the book, The Unexpected Patriot, How an Ordinary Mother is Bringing Terrorists to Justice. And I talked to her about her experience in cyber counterintelligence since 9/11. We began the conversation with a discussion of what she was doing before 9/11 happened.
On September 10th, 2001, I was a sitting judge in Montana. I primarily sat on a criminal court and had been on the bench at that time for just a little, almost 3 years. And I was, you know, of course, married and had three growing children. I had a more normal life as compared to the life I have now. But I was happy. I was content with my career in the law and being a judge. And then, of course, 9/11 happened the next day. And, you know, that not only changed our country and the world with, you know, the attacks that happened that day, but for me, it was really kind of the catalyst of changing the direction my life would lead. And on that, the evening of September 11th, I fell and I broke my pelvis. So I found myself laid up for about 5 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
During that time, in hindsight, as my family pointed out, I started to change as a person. Of course, you know, we don't see that ourselves so much as those around us. And I became interested not only just in, you know, terrorism and Al-Qaeda and the different things, but because of, you know, all the news coverage and everything that was, you know, still going on a daily basis, impacting our lives, being laid up and recovering, I really found myself being radicalized almost against the threat of terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
And so as I recovered, the interest evolved from there, from a passive kind of just, you know, I want to understand it, and evolved into more of a recognition of the different skill sets that I have and I had at that time that weren't necessarily developed where they are today, that would allow me to play a more active or operational role in taking on the terrorism threat.
Mm-hmm. As you started to develop these skills that are detailed in your book, and it's fascinating stuff, more than 50 books you read on Middle Eastern culture, taught yourself Arabic. How'd you teach yourself Arabic?
I'm still learning it. No, really, it's one of those challenges in life. I love a challenge. Something isn't interesting for me unless it is a true and you know, prolific challenge. I mean, then that's when I sink my teeth in.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Arabic language and all the differences, the culture, and that's that part of the world, the Arab world presents to me, continues to fascinate me. But I honestly have to say that I'm very proficient in militant jihadi Arabic. I'm very good with the greetings and, you know, proper, you know, intro language and things like that. But I don't know the whole language per se. So I like to just point that out, that, you know, you couldn't drop me into a, you know, a proper social setting in that part of the world and expect me to survive.
Mm-hmm.
But if you prop me into, you know, in a burqa somewhere, I could, you know, get along very well with, you know, the jihadi and militant language.
So you communicate better with the bad guys than the good guys.
And I find them more interesting to communicate with.
Well, talk about how you became involved with the anti-terrorism effort, and you started out pretty much doing it on your own. You weren't really connected with any law enforcement agency or anything like that. Is that right?
Right. No, when I started out, like I said, you know, I heard early on a news report about how terrorist chatter and, you know, or things were being communicated on the internet. And I was just fascinating, thinking, how can this really be? You know, in my mind, back then, it's easy for me to see that I saw things through a traditional lens of what I perceived intelligence or counterterrorism things to be. And so once I, you know, took that first step into looking into the internet jihadist community and what was actually going on in there, what I had is a passive interest evolved into a growing realization, and that I had certain skills that I could, you know, utilize to bring to the table and possibly, you know, take on the threat myself. And so that's kind of what happened. And then in early 2002, I took my first case to the FBI.
And what kind of response did you get when a judge from Montana, you're a sitting judge, you are in a position of respectability. It's not like you're some crackpot that nobody's ever heard of, but certainly not a law enforcement professional.
Exactly.
Certainly not part of an organized law enforcement operation.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to the FBI and you say, here's how to go catch bad guy X.
Right.
What kind of a response do you get?
Well, the first case in July 2002 that I took, I submitted through the FBI tip line because I didn't know what to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and those exact things that you just pointed out were also the things that inhibited me or really wanted me not to step out of who I was professionally and personally. But yet I didn't have any way myself to determine the viability or credibility of the threat that I wanted to have them look at. So I submitted it through the tips line, and an agent with JTTF contacted me at my court because I wanted to give them enough to say that this isn't some crackpot,
right,
you know, looking at it. So I figured if you saw that, at least I was a professional of some authority, that, you know, they would look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And what was interesting was I assumed at that point that, you know, the resources, the protocols were all in place to be able to take on this information that I had provided that it had developed through open source information on the internet. And come to find out, the agent that contacted me was wanting to know how I found this on the internet and what that was all about. So we spent time back and forth with me explaining how I got the information, what I did to get it, and on, you know, the importance of it. And so it was really, that's where the real hand holding back and forth with the FBI started.
Mm-hmm.
was through that initial tip submission.
Because we know now from having paid attention to a lot of these things and the 9/11 Commission report and so on, that was at the period in time when the agencies were not able to really communicate well,
exactly,
with each other and exchange information with each,
right,
other. And so you stepped right into the middle of that and experienced it firsthand, it sounds like.
Right. Yeah, I did experience it, and I continued to experience it over the years until things started to coalesce and become more of a coordinated effort. You know, I mean, if you think back, you know, prior to the Patriot Act, prior to 9/11, all of those things, the FBI was the FBI, and it was a criminal justice, you know, entity, agency. And then all of a sudden, you know, with its mandate changing to being not only that, but a domestic intelligence agency, of course, you know, they had to find their way through that. And
mm-hmm.
So the skills that I had been developing and the threats that I was looking at and submitting to them, you know, we really evolved, myself and my agent handler with the FBI and the Bureau itself evolved to help understand the threat, take it on, and, I, you know, help find this way through this maze of, you know, the online cyber community that the jihadis operate in.
That's Shannon Rossmiller on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guest to talk about her experience as a counterintelligence asset to the FBI. She's also author of a book called The Unexpected Patriot, How an Ordinary Mother is Bringing Terrorists to Justice. More of my conversation with her as we continue to discuss the state of information sharing since 9/11 up till today, when In Depth with Frances Rose continues on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Wheel was being invented, prehistoric man probably took a snack break. And today, we still grab a little something-something to tide us over when we're on the job. Something sweet or salty or fatty. Unfortunately, those snacks often end up lowering our energy level. And a poor diet can increase our weight while decreasing our ability to work effectively. At Kaiser Permanente, we just think the work snack needs updating. Say, fruit bowls and veggie plates at meetings, or putting locale choices in the vending machines, even lunchtime trips to local farmers markets. It's total health thinking. That's what Kaiser Permanente does for employers that choose us. Provides tools for companies to keep employees healthy and productive. Find out how a Kaiser Permanente plan can help your employees and your business thrive. Go to kp.org/thrive9to5.
Kaiser Foundation Health Plan of the Mid-Atlantic States Incorporated, 2101 East Jefferson Street, Rockville, Maryland, 20852.
And now Ask the CIO, brought to you by Vion Corporation.
Malcolm Jackson is EPA's Assistant Administrator in the Office of Environmental Information and the Chief Information Officer. He says collaboration and messaging tools are among the innovations he wants to bring to the agency.
But looking out over the next few years, I'll be taking a hard look at what are the tools that are available, where are we as an agency, and how can I insert those into the agency in a way with an eye on enriching user interaction with technology as a whole.
CIOs and IT directors, are you paying for capacity services that you're not using? Take a good look at your capacity services contract, and next time, make sure you're not signing just another lease. Ask the experts. Vion Corporation, you can create a plan so that you only pay for what you use. When your job is on the line with data storage decisions, that's the way to go. With a 30-year partnership, Vion and Hitachi Data Systems have been bringing you innovative technologies with integrity and quality service. Visit Vion.com to learn more. That's Vion.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
President Barack Obama with a blunt and chilling warning for al-Qaeda.
We not only took out the symbol and operational leader of al-Qaeda, we walked off with his files.
He called it the largest treasure trove of intelligence ever seized from a terrorist.
Today, every terrorist in the al-Qaeda network should be watching their back, because we're going to review every video, we are going to examine every photo, we're going to read every one of those millions of pages, we're going to pursue every lead.
He told an audience at the CIA they're going to go wherever they have to go to finish the job. I'm J.J. Green.
A concern of every pilot is the weather and needing to know if the conditions are about to deteriorate either on the flight path or where the aircraft is landing. That's where Airink comes in. At the aircrew's request, Airink texts the latest weather information directly to the cockpit, thus providing pilots the information they need to decide whether to change routes or divert to another landing location. For more information and career opportunities, log on to ARINC.com.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. The CIO Council has been around for about a decade. Now it's about to undergo a major transformation. We'll hear what the CIO of Homeland Security has to say about it. Plus, Congress is getting interested in cybersecurity again. We'll tell you what they're talking about. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. More of my conversation now with Shannon Rossmiller. She's author of the book, The Unexpected Patriot, How an Ordinary Mother is Bringing Terrorists to Justice. Ms. Rossmiller, a former federal judge in Montana and now a cyber counterintelligence asset to the FBI against Muslim extremists. And my conversation with her continuing.
Do you ever run into anybody who said, thanks for the information, but you're killing us because you're out there in Montana doing this and on your own pretty much, and we're a big law enforcement agency and we're struggling to do the same thing?
No, not necessarily in that context. In 2003, I had the one case that made me come out of the shadows and brought my work to the attention of the public involved that type of a situation where this Army soldier was trying to defect to al-Qaeda before his unit deployed to Iraq. And he was in a position of authority with a tank crew. And anyway, so when I took all this information to, you know, the FBI in Montana and they were, this is military, what do we do with this? And what are you doing with this? Mm-hmm. And what do you expect us to do? And so that really right there necessitated bringing in DOD and then Army and Army CID. We had Homeland Security and FBI and all these fingers in the pot trying to figure out who should be doing what with this information with this individual and for what purpose. And so and then I'm standing there saying it's clear to me what needs to be done. I mean, but there again, you know, I wasn't encumbered and clouded as I know now by the bureaucracy bubble in mm-hmm. the sense that to me, as I knew I had stayed within the legal parameters, what was their problem? Why couldn't they see this? And so the differences in that, you know, that gray area have, you know, narrowed over the years. And but that, I think, highlights essentially what you were, you know, asking about, at least in that context.
Yeah.
It's been a learning process over the years to the point where now things are far more productive. And I mean, it's phenomenal when I think back to 2002 and where things are today, how far we've grown.
Well, that's where I wanted to go next is, are you getting a sense that the agencies are better connected? I mean, we hear about a high profile get like Osama bin Laden, and Secretary Gates goes on TV and says this is a primary example of information sharing among the agencies, and that's, it's hard to argue otherwise.
Sure.
But I guess taking a broader view, he's not the only guy we're after. Mm-hmm. There are thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of them. And is this just a lucky confluence of events because it was a high profile target, or is this, does this represent maybe a watershed moment in how agencies are able to share information together?
I think it's starting to highlight a watershed moment of how they have, you know, that process has evolved.
Mm-hmm.
I would honestly sit here and say that it's not coalesced to the point where, you know, the initial problems of sharing information and turf battles and things like that have ended. To this day, I still run into, you know, those elements, mm-hmm. but they're not as strong, they're not as powerful as they once were, and things are being shared more frequently, but there still is some of those things out there. But I think where I've seen most of those elements start to, you know, still be kind of fractured are on things that are not as initially relevant as those things that are known to be of high importance, mm-hmm. or, you know, like a high value target such as bin Laden, or, you know, other, you know, high people up in Al Qaeda or within, you know, the terrorist networks.
Yeah.
So when it comes to those, you know, high value, important, high item things, I think there's far more coordination, which is a good thing.
Right.
But, you know, when we're starting here and looking at, you know, connecting all the dots of information initially that help us develop and, you know, determine the nature of a threat, that's where a lot of the fracture still, in my opinion, is lingering.
Well, the good news then, I guess, is that if this is the beginning of that kind of a turn, that in and of itself should be scary to the bad guys. For them, if no other reason for them to say, hey, they're on to us, and they are eventually going to catch up with us at some point.
You know, I think from our Western, if we look through things like, to answer your question, I'm going to answer it two ways. If I look through things through the lens of the Western mind and Western perspective, I would agree with your statement.
Okay.
When I put on my other hat and look at it through the lens, through the militant jihadi Arab world and all the things that culturally influence that mindset, I would say that doesn't mean much to me at all.
Mm-hmm.
Because the way they think and the way they operate and how they focus still is unique and apart from how we look at things and analyze and value them through the lens of our Western perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as being able to, should they be scared? Yeah, sure they should. But there again, they don't perceive us in the same way as we perceive ourselves, mm-hmm. and the threat that we actually present. And so I think until we have a better understanding of that thinking and that mindset from that part of the world and how they value and evaluate us,
mm-hmm.
there's not going to be a true ability to gauge and evaluate them as the enemy as there needs to be.
How are we doing at understanding that cultural difference, at being able to look at the world and look at ourselves from their perspective, as you just discussed?
I think that's one of the things that is one of our Achilles' heel and still enables us to be behind the eight ball of the threat. I mean, we still lack that ability to understand the Arab mind and that culture, because we still want to put them into the template that we would like them to be in, and that just doesn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot look at your enemy or your target as how you perceive them based on the things that, you know, influence you and your mindset. You have to look at it from their perspective, and we're not doing that. It is being done, but it's not being done on the level that it needs to be in order to really understand this threat, take it on and defeat it.
That's Shannon Rossmiller, a former federal judge, and my guest on In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. She's author of the book The Unexpected Patriot, How an Ordinary Mother's Bringing Terrorists to Justice. And you can find out more about it at federalnewsradio.com. My conversation with her continuing in just a few moments.
There's no better way to study the world's best golf swings than to watch them side by side on the range. Move down the line from Arnold Palmer to Fred Couples to Phil Mickelson, and you notice not just the differences, but the similarities, like their wonderful balance, rhythm, and timing. And if you look closely as they leave, you'll notice something else they have in common. The same timepiece, a Rolex Day-Date. Available in 18-karat white or yellow gold or platinum, the Day-Date is put through 15 days and nights of the most grueling testing before it ever leaves Geneva. That ensures that, like these great golfers, it will perform as well in the real world as it does in practice. To see a complete selection of Rolex timepieces, visit your official Rolex jeweler.
See what a new watch can say about you at Tourneau, the world's largest watch store. Tourneau. The Fashion Center at Pentagon City, Arlington.
Discover how to advance your career with a wide range of online and on-site graduate degree courses at a University of Maryland University College open house. Join UMUC for lunch on Tuesday, May 24th from 11:30 to 2 at 1307 New York Avenue Northwest. Meet with advisors from such graduate programs as acquisition, cybersecurity, nonprofit and association management, and more. That's Tuesday, May 24th. For complete details, visit umuc.edu. That's umuc.edu.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth every Saturday at 10 a.m. here on 1500 a.m. This week, my special guest will be Dean Catino of Monument Wealth Management. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area. Check us out on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Attention employees of the intelligence community and Department of Defense. Right now, you could be eligible for affordable term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by Prudential. Learn more about this important benefit for government employees at GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102, contract series 83500.
Nano, or very small, materials are finding their way into products from cosmetics to medicines. Are we ready for them in our food? Nanotechnology might allow more control over how our bodies use food, says Rod Hill of the University of Idaho.
These are materials that a physicist can make or an engineer can make, and the scale that they make those materials at, this nanoscale, is almost identical to the scale of the molecules that occur in our bodies.
Hill says tiny structures might be designed to hold on to certain food chemicals that provide taste but little nutrition, letting them just pass through your body.
You could actually get the same flavor sensation, but with a whole lot less of that stuff that's actually bad for you.
Hill says much more research is needed, though, to determine both the best way to make such products and any health implications. To find out more, go to nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
In the beloved fairy tale Beauty and the Beast, Belle and the Beast learn that true beauty is found within and live happily ever after. Today, our happily ever afters are being threatened by the fact that nearly one in three children in America are overweight or obese. Now is the time to make good nutrition and physical activity part of your family's daily lifestyle. To learn more, visit letsmove.gov. Brought to you by Let's Move, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Shannon Rossmiller is a counterintelligence and terrorism asset for the FBI. She coordinates efforts online and catches the cyber bad guys. And it's a fascinating conversation that I had with her last week. The book that she's written is called The Unexpected Patriot, How an Ordinary Mother is Bringing Terrorists to Justice. And I talked to her throughout this conversation about how sharing information among agencies is getting better in the wake of 9/11 and about her experiences in working with the FBI and other federal agencies.
How do we change our mindset? How do we change the bureaucracies that are dealing with this threat to be able to make that shift?
Well, first of all, somehow we have to get out of that bureaucracy bubble, that black hole, because these people, our targets and enemies, think outside of the box. They're not encumbered by rules and regulations that are inherently, you know, those of a government. So when you're fighting a non-traditional enemy that isn't constrained by those things, fighting them through your rules and regulations, though we need to do those things, there still has to be an element that is able to be able to take on the enemy outside of the box, yet done legally, efficiently, and, you know, respecting, you know, not only their culture, but in their countries and their laws. Mm-hmm. And it can be done. And I think that that's the template for exactly how I've approached this. And it's worked.
Yeah.
It's worked over 214 times.
Talk about that record. 214 operations that have resulted in what?
Some convictions, two of the largest convictions here in the United States. Other criminal justice cases here in the United States. But primarily, most of those represent operation information and operational cases abroad in other countries involving individuals of other countries and as well as individuals from the United States and other countries.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk about that, I have to clarify that number does not represent 214 people, 214 groups. Most of the time, information operations, in fact, most of the time, information operations are what lead us to the individuals that eventually become the targets.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I talk about that number represents all of those things, information operations that have led to individuals as well as groups, both here at home and abroad, but primarily outside of the United States.
You are involved in what is now called cyber counterintelligence.
Right.
I'm fascinated by the diffusion of what used to just be referred to broadly as cybersecurity. Now we have a number of specialties. Cyber counterintelligence is one of them. Cyber warfare is another one. Cyber defense, cyber offense, and there are countless others now.
Cybersecurity. Yeah, exactly.
Uh-huh. What does that say to you about how we are starting to understand how to perform some of these operations like you're doing? Is that a positive step, or is it just a bunch of buzzwords that people are sticking on things to make them sound sexy?
Well, sure. I mean, it can be both, and it is both. But what's important is that when we identify all those different areas, at least we've identified them and separated them. And it's not just, you know, just put into one, you know, big ball that is all cyber.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to distinguish, because those different areas are going to dictate the different resources, the different means and methods and sources that are going to be required to take on the threat, whether it's security, whether it's intelligence, whether it's terrorism, and wherever those different areas lead us. So, yeah, I mean, but what's interesting about anything new in developing is it has to start somewhere, and identifying and defining what those areas are and then developing those areas is all part of the process that, as you pointed out, that I've been involved with, that I started out without even knowing what I was starting out doing.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is, you know, I'm one of those individuals that has helped kind of path that road.
Mm-hmm.
So that we have these areas identified and we're doing something in a more coordinated and illustrated effort.
Are you finding, as you have been doing this now for almost 10 years, that there becomes a pattern or a routine or guidelines or policies that you follow that are becoming the policies for more general cyber counterintelligence, or is it still kind of a wild west as it was at the beginning, I imagine, where you don't know what the next one might be like, how similar it might be to the last one or the one before that?
It started out, there was a lot of trial and error that helped develop this template that I now use kind of as a playbook.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the playbook has to change with the trend and as, you know, the threat landscape develops and leads us in different directions. So a lot of the same protocols that I was using, you know, initially and have developed more are still in place, But there's that flexibility within them to be legally sufficient and to be operationally relevant. I mean, there's all kinds of different areas that dictate, you know, how that is all going to evolve.
Mm-hmm.
And that the protocols, yes, they are. I mean, I'm going to say that there are some in place. The things that I don't like to see is those hard and fast protocols that cannot be bended to meet the needs as they change mm-hmm. and the trends develop. And so, and there is still some of that. But the good thing is that for the most part, these protocols are learning and becoming more flexible as they're developing. And so I know at least as far as what I do and how I've done it, that's how I have operated. And mm-hmm. so I know that when 2004, when I started putting together in a more formal fashion this playbook that I use, this template that I operate from, it was, you know, it was done with the FBI's direction and request, because I'd come in and I'd say off these things off the top of my head
mm-hmm.
and how I did them and why and whatever, you know, was relevant to that. So that really kind of started, at least for out of the Salt Lake Division, a really good template for these protocols to develop within the bureaucratic nature that they needed to be developed in.
Mm-hmm.
And yet I use mine on the private side and still being legal in all those areas as well.
Shannon Ross Miller is a counterintelligence and terrorism asset for the FBI and works counterintelligence to find and identify Al-Qaeda operatives. She's a former federal judge in Montana and the author of the book, The Unexpected Patriot, How an Ordinary Mother is Bringing Terrorists to Justice. It's In-Depth with Frances Rose at Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. More of my conversation with her in just a moment.
NBC News Radio, I'm Luke Russert. Widespread devastation. The worst tornado in Missouri's history has killed at least 90 people in Joplin, and the search is on for survivors. Missouri Governor Jay Nixon.
And you have some massive buildings down, and not only individual houses, but the tornado smashed straight into a hospital that's been evacuated. You have a shelter up and operating there, high schools. The bottom line is a very, very significant damage to about 2,000 structures.
On Wall Street, stocks are down after warnings about the finances of several European countries. The Dow is seeking a triple-digit point decline. The S&P and the NASDAQ are also down. President Obama just wrapped up a speech to tens of thousands of people in Dublin, sending greetings from millions of Irish Americans.
You could say there's always been a little green behind the red, white, and blue.
Ireland is the first stop on a six-day, four-country European visit. I'm Luke Russert, NBC News Radio.
Hot dogs, buns, paper plates, icy cold Coke, relish for Aunt Sue, napkins, lots of napkins. Julie Gertz is having a Memorial Day barbecue, so she ran to Walgreens to pick up all the goods. With no lines and great parking, she was in and out in a flash. Now until May 28th at Walgreens, get four Coke 12-packs for just $14. Then fire up the grill. Simplify your shopping. With Walgreens, there's a way. Offer not valid in Alaska or San Francisco, California.
Could switching to GEICO really save you 15% or more on car insurance? Can you find anything on the internet? Well, I'm sure you can, but don't take my word for it. Just ask this talking dog, who can only say I love you. Roll the clip. One more time, talking dog.
For a free rate quote, visit GEICO.com to see how much you could save. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
The Government IT Solutions Spotlight is brought to you by CDWG.
Later this year, the State Department will finish digitizing thousands of documents that support immigrant visas. Kerit Amin is the Chief Information Officer for State's Bureau of Consular Affairs. He says by going electronic, the work can be done anywhere and at any time. It will also give state's customers better service and lower the costs and improve flexibility for the agency. Amin says putting immigrant visa data online is part of a broader effort to get rid of paper. He says all the records for non-immigrant visas are already online.
If you're in federal IT, you know that every internet connection and every mobile device poses a threat to your data. Visit cdwg.com/security to learn how our security experts use the latest technology to help keep your agency ahead of those threats. CDWG, people who get it.
Visit cdwg.com to learn how HP's Blade technology and Blade System Matrix can help you increase productivity and the capacity of your data center.
I was having chest pain and needed help. Emergency care saved my life. When I got to the emergency room, I couldn't breathe. The pain was intense. Luckily, an emergency physician was by my side. He discovered the blood clot near my heart, opened my chest, and removed the clot. His quick thinking and training saved my life.
Emergency medicine is critical at any hour of any day, and it's less than 2% of the nation's healthcare dollar. Visit acep.org, paid for by the American College of Emergency Physicians.
Tom Tamman and Amy Morris, weekday mornings 6 to 10.
That leaves about a third of Americans over the age of 15 who've never been married.
30%, yeah.
Those figures come from a report with a romantic title called, ready? Oh, this is hot. Number, Timing, and Duration of Marriages and Divorces 2009.
Well, the census. They put no emotion in this report.
The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris, weekday mornings 6 to 10.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And this hour, a conversation with Shannon Rossmiller. She is a retired federal judge from Montana who started on 9/11 a journey as a counter cyber intelligence asset to the FBI, talking about the experiences that she's had in dealing with the FBI and other law enforcement organizations inside government, and in this highlight, talking about more on information sharing.
I want to ask you about a couple of events, not individually, and these are not events that you've been involved with personally, but a number of events that have been attributed over the past several years to Al-Qaeda followers or admirers, if not to the organization themselves. We had the shoe bomber, we had the underwear bomber, the Times Square bomber, the Fort Hood shooter. When you see these people do what they do, are there consistencies that you see? Are there patterns that you say, boy, somebody should have picked up on that? Are there other reactions that you have when you see these events happen? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. There's common elements and threads through each one of those that you've mentioned. And they apply not only to those individuals, but also to other individuals domestically here at home in what we've call this lone wolf phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most important foundational things that runs through each one of these is their radicalization process.
Mm-hmm.
And identifying that, and, you know, noticing when those red flags and warnings start to present themselves. And so we're struggling through that effort right now because you had the political correctness element, which is impeding a lot of that. And yet the radicalization phenomenon that is, you know, used to be just in a group context, now done, you know, individually and self-trained and self-radicalized, is really something that there's not a consistent handle on.
Mm-hmm.
I have my own components that I use as far as going into and trying to identify the radicalization elements that are attributable and specific to lone actors, individuals mm-hmm. who self-train and whatnot. And so until, you know, that is a more coordinated, you know, collective, you know, process, there's still going to be a lot of these issues that continue to come up.
Mm-hmm.
That's really where the trend is going. That's really where the threat is leading us, is this lone wolf phenomenon and self-radicalization. And it, as with anything that's done individually, a lot of it is self-contained, is an isolated, which makes it more difficult to pick up on. But yet there are, you know, common areas that you can pick out in each one of these.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I think that's where the whole process needs to start to be formally developed and applied.
The Fort Hood shooter, when I read the report put out on him, I was stricken by the message that I took away primarily from the report was there were sufficient warning signs here that this guy should have been caught,
mm-hmm.
That somebody should have been aware that this guy was a potential threat. Is that a fair takeaway on my part?
Oh, absolutely.
Think?
I mean, blatantly. There were red flags falling out of the tree. I mean, for a process of over 2 years with Major Hassan, as we now know, the reason he remained people. If you look back at all the things that were being reported about Major Hassan immediately following the Fort Hood attack,
mm-hmm.
where not only were, you know, people who knew him in a social context, but people who worked with him, his colleagues, as well as even his administrators and superiors had noticed and tried to do and report a lot of these red flag warnings that were causing concern. Nothing was being done. One common reason why, it was because he was a Muslim. And until we have the courage as a society and as a country to distinguish between the political correctness that impedes us in if these individuals are going to hide under the blanket of a religious cause, then we better be able to have the ability to pull that blanket over and look underneath. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. And not only were these red flags available and, I mean, out there openly, the thing that was problematic after the Fort Hood was the Defense Department claimed that they had no resources available to them that would have, even if they had formally identified all these red flags, that could have allowed them to do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just blatantly wrong because I had participated in a study in 2007 that addressed exactly that. And it was in a report called The Radicalization of Muslims Within the DOD
mm-hmm.
that provided findings and recommendations that could have, had they utilized that resource, prevented Fort Hood from happening.
That's Shannon Ross Miller. She is author of the book, The Unexpected Patriot, How an Ordinary Mother is Bringing Terrorists to Justice. And she is an asset for the FBI in counterintelligence and terrorism. It's In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. More with her in just moments to wrap up hour number one of In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Virtualization Expert is brought to you by VMware and Carahsoft.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. Federal agencies are transforming server, storage, and networking resources into secure, agile resource pools to deliver IT as a service. This is cloud computing, and it starts with virtualization. When storage, networking, and servers are woven together on a virtualization platform, federal agencies can customize their own evolutionary journey to the cloud. By virtualizing existing IT resources, you can build a private or hybrid cloud infrastructure that delivers agility, security, flexibility, and cost savings. You can build your cloud. More than 200,000 customers are virtualizing mission-critical IT resources with VMware today. If you are interested in cloud computing, shouldn't you join them?
VMware's cloud infrastructure solutions are based on their award-winning virtualization technology. That's the foundation of your cloud. To learn more about adopting the administration's cloud-first policy, visit thevirtualizationexpert.com. That's thevirtualizationexpert.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
If you're an IT professional looking to advance your career, it's anything but a game. Which is why UMBC is the only university in Maryland to offer graduate programs in human-centered computing, where students apply principles from human-computer interaction, behavioral sciences, and design. UMBC also offers graduate programs in information systems, including an online master's in IS. Get the credential that makes a difference and put some muscle back into your resume. Find out more at is.umbc.edu today.
You want to win government business, but so do your competitors. How do you gain the competitive edge? By using Dell Tech's solutions to identify the right opportunities, assemble the right teams, and capture the right contracts. Only Dell Tech provides access to the nation's largest government opportunity database, essential market intelligence, and top teaming partners. Visit DellTech.com/gov to see why 98 of the top 100 contractors win more with Dell Tech. Dell Tech. Know more. Do more.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. More of my conversation with Shannon Rossmiller, a former federal judge who's now an counterintelligence and terrorism asset for the FBI, working on cyber counterintelligence cases against Al-Qaeda and other Muslim extremists. And my conversation with her taking place here last week in our Federal News Radio studios, and talking about some of the issues that DOD, FBI, and other agencies are running up against in exchanging information and catching the bad guys.
There is a school of thought that I've heard a number of people discuss among national security folks and counterintelligence folks, that the lone wolves are more dangerous by far than Al-Qaeda's organized efforts, especially within the United States. Do you agree with that?
I absolutely agree with that.
Talk about why it's so difficult, even given the fact that you have some of the techniques available to you that you've talked about and that law enforcement organizations and counterintelligence organizations have available to them, why it's still hard to track those people down, because it doesn't seem to me that they work in complete, absolute, total isolation.
Well, that's true. I mean, not everything, you know, is done in a bubble. I mean, and certainly, you know, when anytime you have something that is individual, you're going to have those, you know, insulated elements. But one thing, as far as if we're going to look at the radicalization phenomenon and how that applies to individual actors, they have to, if they're going to self-radicalize, they're going to use a lot of the same resources. And so targeting and being able to monitor the use, the viewing, the whatever it is that they are using for, you know, their self-radicalization process, those resources can and should be where we start. And you know, as with anything, you're going to, you know, if you've got a jihad manual out there that's going to teach you how to self-train and self-radicalize, then you might have 500 people grab it. Now, within that, maybe only 10 are going to have the intent to do anything more than to just satisfy their curiosity and maybe even believe in radical views but not have any intent to act on them. It's those 10 that do intend to act on that we can trace and we can track and we can follow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier to do that in the virtual reality, virtual world of the Internet, of course, than it is in the real world. But yet, if you're going to act individually and alone and with any, you know, belief that you have any privacy in doing that, the Internet is where these people are going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to track, and I've done that and I do that, and I'm not going to tell you how and why.
Nor will I ask.
Thank you. It can be done. It should be done. And that's where a lot of these dangerous bad seeds fall out of the tree.
Is
it starts there and you weed out what isn't threat related. It takes time, but it can happen. And then you focus in on those hard and fast elements that seem to remain.
The bad news that has now become an old saw is they only have to be right once. We have to be right 100% of the time. Is there good news to balance that bad news as we look at where we are today and where we hope to be in the next year to 2 years to 5 years?
Yes and no. There's always good news to focus on. It's just that the government doesn't always and cannot, because of the nature of its function, necessarily always point to the good things that are happening, the successes that are happening that are sustaining us and maybe even in the long term going to allow us to take the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not in the lead now. We're behind the threat and the trends of that threat. That doesn't mean we can't get there, but we're closer than we've ever been before. And that's important to know. And that's one of the things that, with my continuing to remain, you know, on the private side of things, yet work within whether it's local, you know, law enforcement or with state agencies, the state fusion centers, as well as, you know, the agencies, as well as defense contractors. Staying private and independent has allowed me to continue to follow these things and talk about successes in the war on terror that they aren't otherwise able to speak to.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've done that at various times over the years, and the public should hear more about that because, as you're right, we only sometimes, you know, we only hear about the failures, and we hear very little, if nothing, about the successes. But there are far more successes that are not spoken about than what people have any knowledge of. And that's unfortunate, but that's just the nature. That's just the nature of government and information flow.
That is Shannon Rossmiller, my conversation with the author of the book, The Unexpected Patriot, How an Ordinary Mother is Bringing Terrorists to Justice. You can hear the entire conversation posted at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth later this afternoon, and we'll have a highlight for you later on in the program. A lot on today's In-Depth with Francis Rose lined up for you. Coming up in just moments on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your cloud is probably going to be your cloud, your own private cloud, and we'll have details on why that's probably the case on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Also, the Department of Veterans Affairs getting strategic on acquisition. They'll tell you why and how they're doing it. All coming up in hour number two of In-Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.